And which leads me very nicely into my guest, because as part of that new Wednesday political programme, from time to time I will be joined by the eminent Michael Casey. Michael hosts a website called yourthurrock.com, and very, very successfully. He's been running, coming up for 5 years now, and thousands of page views. And also he's got a degree in political history, and so he'll be assisting me from time to time when we're carrying out these political debates, and he's my guest this afternoon. Good afternoon, Michael.
Good afternoon, Mike.
And let's start then. Let's talk about news that's just really coming in today that we could be entering a triple dip recession. What does that actually mean?
It's difficult to say. I think people generally agree we're not in a good place. And you can take, I guess, the political way of saying that, the Conservatives say, well, this is the no pain, no gain. This is the consequence of the world recession, or indeed the work of what happened with the Labour government. You know, and that's one way of looking at it. The other way is that in 2010, every, you know, even in Essex, you know, when you're following the campaigns of in the general election, a lot of the Labour candidates or sitting MPs were saying, don't cut too deep, too fast, too quick. And indeed, people like Ed Balls have continued to say that. And so they'd say this is the consequence that we have now, you know, poor figures and on the verge possibly of a third, you know, that just triple dip recession. So it sounds like an ice cream, but it's not funny.
We've been here before, though, haven't we? Because figures released also recently saying, you know, the post-war, we were in a worse position than we are now. So it is, there is huge swings, surely.
Well, yeah, I think it's less about the swings. I suppose for a lot of people, I think, what does this mean to me? You know, it's like, what does this mean to the man in the street? Because you could see figures and talking about what's happened, and there was, you know, people will talk, well, the dip's because of problems in the mining sector and North Sea oil fields. Now, if you're walking down Brentwood High Street, you're thinking, so that's why, that doesn't make any sense to me. And so I think where people sort of see, it's people's image of the recession are, I guess, three things, aren't they? They're seeing Jessop's is closed, Blockbuster's closed, and HMV is closed. And that's the way people will define the recession in January 2013.
What is your, for want of a better word, postbag? When you're talking to politicians all the time of all various parties, what are the things that they're saying to you at the moment? Local councillors, etc.
I think it's interesting because you will talk to people and they'll talk about, for example, food banks. And they'll say there are food banks in certain parts of Essex where people can go and, you know, there's a system if you can't afford food, et cetera, or other necessities. And that's something. And then again, I spoke to a political assistant who's moved from Darlington to London and is working out here in Essex. And they said, yeah, but you've got one food bank here. There's somewhere in Darlington or near places in the northeast will have six. And they said, and people aren't just looking for food. They're looking for the real necessities of things like nappies and products like that, saying can't not only afford to feed yourself, we've gone beyond that, some people, they can't afford to clothe their own baby. And that is another level. So it is all relative. And I guess as well, having made reference to those three shops, you know, they'll say, yeah, you've mentioned those three places closing, but you had Kiddie Care opening at Lakeside with 167 jobs. You know, and they'll name other. You'll have Lakeside rebranding itself. You know, it's going to become into Lakeside and rebranding itself. We have a shopping centre closing down, and that's the relative thing. Talk about local politicians. That's the feedback from somebody from the north coming to the southeast.
And they're also council leaders now talking. Virtually every council in the surrounding areas talking about budget cuts. And we're coming up for budget times now. What areas are they making those cuts in?
I think across the board. You get sometimes, you know, it is difficult, you know, that sometimes you sit, even as a journalist or, you know, in his early 50s, you still feel sometimes that you're that kid who got that C, scraped the C at O-level economics in 1978. And so therefore you have to transfer, again, what does it mean to the man on the street? And I think sometimes you're looking at these savings and you're looking at it and think, I can understand. You know, they're saying that a fraud department has several people who are working for agencies, and that's costing £50,000 a year extra, so we're cutting that. And sometimes you'll think, are these the cuts that really, it's almost luxury, that's a, you know, feel that there's a luxury and a rethinking and a redirection that can make that make sense. You know, you talk about, you know, you can a theatre, they might, or a theatre complex, and they might say we need to make £250,000 savings. and you just wondered, where did it come to that ballpark figure? And perhaps there is. Perhaps there is wastage.
Yeah, I mean, and also, I'm sure if a theatre in your area closes, then there's a public outcry. But then you've also got to say to the public, hang on a minute, did you actually go? The reason that's in trouble is because falling attendances, etc. If you didn't go in the first place, that's why it's closing. Hmm. You know, we're talking about, we talked yesterday on the breakfast programme about a pub closing. Your phone's making a funny noise as well. He's very busy. And it's, you know, the pub closed. But did the pub close because everybody's, you know, didn't use it enough? So it's now going to be a supermarket, that sort of thing. You're still buzzing, by the way.
I've just switched it off.
You switched it off. It's still buzzing. It's a strange noise, isn't it?
Maybe it's yours.
Maybe it's mine. It is mine. I'm blaming you. It's me. We'll get back to that. I know who that is. That's Chris Evans, who's going to be joining us later. Okay, so, you know... We were going back to just talking about theatres there and closing it, and what we've wasted. I want to talk about wastage with you as well, because sort of councils have been thrown this get rid of wastage in the last five or longer years, and surely we've cut all the wastage now. There can't be much more to cut. We're now having to cut into really, really important services.
Yeah, that's I guess the thing when they talk about frontline services. And I think that's what where you got to see next, you know. And again, what does that mean? You know, for people, what does that mean, a frontline service going? I mean, that's a job. That is a care, you know, is that a number of carers who are caring for people? You know, have we got to that stage yet? And maybe not. I mean, we are talking about a budget for 2013-14 and 14-15. So you can see cuts. A bit. People are right, you know, we mentioned the theatre, which is actually a complex, and cutting $250,000. That might mean a cafe that's never used. Closing that down and getting Starbucks in, you know, yeah. These are the basics. But also what people were worried about, again, £250,000 spent on PCSOs in an area, you know, and the council saying we're the only, supposing you get a council in Essex, and we're using the example of Thurrock, but it's, if they're saying, well, we match fund so many PCSOs to the tune of X amount, hundreds of thousands, why are we doing that match funding? Nobody else needs to be, and maybe everybody's pointing at you saying, hey, you know, not laughing at them, but saying, we can't afford to do it anymore. If you want that, you know, the police, you've got to pay for it. Or if people want, and it probably does then pull into question, it's almost like a forensic examination of why did we have this fluffy idea in the mid-90s of PCSOs? Maybe it's a luxury we can't afford. Actually, what we really want is cops attending a job and solving crime, you know, not drinking tea at a community centre, which can, it's a whole lot of debate about criminal justice and prevention, etc. But we've gone down an avenue there.
We'll go down a lot more avenues. We're going to take a break for the news, and we'll come back after the news and talk in detail even and across the world as well. It's Mike Jones sitting in for Drive. My special guest this afternoon is Michael Casey. We're talking politics. Michael, in the news this week, very local, Basildon Hospital, a coachload of men with clipboards turned up. What was that all about?
Basildon Hospital is one of these hospitals you call beleaguered or troubled, et cetera, et cetera. It's a drop-down menu of terms we use in journalism. I think it seems to be a series of complaints. I think the basic idea is a series of complaints that have gone on, of different complaints for years and years, and the government inspector, somebody called the Care Quality Commission, come in, and if they're not happy, they'll come in again, and they'll do, you know, and it does, as you described, it's not far off, you know, that on a Monday morning, you know, a hospital running as normally, and a minibus will turn up, and we understand that. That's what happened. Minibus turns up, and it's these, you know, a minibus full of government inspectors from the Care Quality Commission who come in, not just to wander around. They'll have a specific brief, and it's about certain issues that occurred last year that they're not happy with, and they want to find out if these things are now being complied with. I guess what people see in a hospital like Basildon, they say, when's this going to end? And you know, these sort of questions, when's it going to end, and what happens if it just doesn't get resolved? And it's almost like it does appear with some places, like a hospital, that you'll fix one thing and another thing will turn up in another ward. And how long will that go on? Will this go on just for decades and everybody go, okay?
Yeah. And it's almost sad in some ways because, I mean, speaking from personal experience, you know, I had treatment at Basildon Hospital recently, and I can do nothing but praise it. It was excellent from start to finish. You know, I was seen on time, I didn't wait long, treatment was excellent, you know, people were considerate and careful. You know, I've got nothing for praise. Well, other people have possibly got horror stories, you know?
Hmm.
And that's the nature of their business, I suppose.
Yes, you're saying that, basically, are they saying that, therefore, the hospital is working at 85% efficiency or 90% efficiency, and there's your anecdote, which is not just an anecdote, it's an experience. You know, you could write it down and say, there's my sworn testimony. But they'll say, even, you know, must, is it that, that, you know, even 10%, 5% of dissatisfied customers? Now, dissatisfied customers are not like a bad meal at a restaurant. It could be life and death. And that's why they'll say they have these stringency. So, you know, there'll all be all sorts of, there's a new chief executive in, you know, and therefore she's got to deal with all this. And how is she getting on? And we take it from there. I guess, as I said, what the end game is, what's going to happen in the end? Is this going to, we're going to be here in 10 years' time, well, and it almost become, you know, the sharp intake of breath. You could be in another hospital 40, 50 miles away, and somebody will say, you know, and you know, I said to her recently, I was 50 miles away in the hospital, and said to the consultant, I mentioned that on our patch is Basildon Hospital, and it was a sort of sharp intake of breath. And you thought, well, if that's what a consultant in another hospital says, you know, it's almost like, it's almost that the image is of almost the big, like, the castle in Transylvania really looks at a place and it's, oh, that's a place of foreboding. And it's not like that. As you said from your experience, I think the question is, how do they get themselves out of this? And the answer is, I don't know, but that's the challenge of a well-paid chief executive.
And surely as well, they're getting to the point where they could be overwhelmed as well because, you know, the closure of Orsett Hospital, other hospitals in the area, you know, everybody's going to go to Basildon or Southend or in Romford area. Queen's is handling everything. They're now talking about closing King George. You know, there gets to a point where doctor surgeries these days are becoming overwhelmed because the population is growing and growing and growing. Are we opening enough hospitals and doctor surgeries quick enough?
That's a very good question. We, of course, have an ageing population. You know, the last thing I've just been filming an interview with is about, you know, ageing populations and legacies, you know, to do with wills and power of attorney, et cetera. And that theme of dealing with an older, dealing is a harsh word, but catering for an aging population, you know, an adult social care. I think there's in Barnet, there's a sort of Barnet graph of doom where almost like 100% of a council's budget could be dealing with adult social care, meaning lots and lots of us all growing old, you know, and even that fact that the baby's born, I'm not sure my stat here, but a baby's born this week, you know, two or three out of five will probably live to 100.
That's incredible, isn't it? Incidentally, my headmaster died yesterday. From my old school, he was 103, bless him. I thought he died years ago, but he died.
Did he die in office?
No, yes. No, not at all. So that moves us swiftly on to education, A-levels.
Yes, it's an ongoing debate and a never-changing, a movable feast and never-changing, but I think what Michael Gove wants, and it seems to be what Michael Gove wants, Michael Gove gets, is to bring back that two-year A-level... more or less diminishing the role of this AS level, which you take after a year, but a straight. I know there's a criticism. Sometimes people think that politicians in their middle age want to replicate the education system they had. So whether Michael Gove feels the rigor of a 2 year A level with exams at the end is what he wants. Now, educationalists across the county will say, no, we've got the system now because it's been growing sophistication and demand and meeting demands and changes, etc., because it's not 1983 anymore. And indeed, they may say the idea, where in the job are you given, go away for 2 years and come back and see what the results are and no checking, no assessment, etc. That doesn't occur. I think they'll say that's why we have a system of continuous assessment. And in fact, funny enough, you mentioned that I went to university in the early 80s and my university was one of the first to run continuous assessment, and it was seen as quite revolutionary. Students have called it continuous harassment. The idea of being, in fact, people say, "What was that?" But for the public sector, for the grant you got, you had to maybe do an exam every 3 months. Yeah, and that was almost the beginning there in the early 80s of an education system which did continuous assess and check and judge, as we all do in our jobs.
I went to a parents' evening. I won't say which school. There's three things that staggered me last night. First of all, every teacher had an iPad, which I thought, And my 15-year-old son made a great comment because I said to the teacher, "I've noticed all of you have got iPads. Did the school provide them?" Yeah, they did. And my son said, "Yeah, and we've still got mixed-gender toilets." Good comment. Also, the fact that Year 11 students now just seem to drift away when they've done their exams. You know, when I was at school back in the dark ages, we all finished on May the 12th, and that was, you know, whatever the date was, and that was it. But now there seems to, yeah, you go when you like, really. It's just a whole different education. And my son said to another teacher, but I'm not getting enough homework from you. I need some, I want to do some more. She said, email me. What? Yeah. Email you? What do you mean email? What about talking? You know?
Well, it's funny you should say that without plugging the newspaper I run, yourthyroid.com, and I just have, is that we have had our most successful week paid views-wise. Now, it wasn't the great investigative journalism that we've all done or fascinating stories, etc. It was the snow.
It was the snow.
And what we're talking about is that people want to know, from Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, people want to know, is my school open or closed? Because I have to either decide about childcare, jobs, travel, transport. And the idea is for us, there's no way at 7 o'clock in the morning we'll put a list up. Those days no longer exist. And, of course, when you work through Twitter, you know, we have 4,000 followers on Twitter. People want to communicate now. They want to know which schools, where, when, etc. What do we know? And it's that, you know, either Twitter or phoning or texting. That is the, you know, and even in 2013, so since the last bad snows in, say, November 2011, a real seismic change in the way people want to receive information. Mm. And that relates to that, you know, we, as I said, huge page views for a little old online newspaper. But in the same way about the iPad, about staff communicating with iPads and technology, et cetera, et cetera. Of course, these ways have changed, and that, you know, you can produce this, you know, the whole... and indeed, somebody did suggest, I know a social media guy called John Popham up in Northern England, he said, surely schools' websites should have the homework for the day on them.
Hmm.
If, you know, that's where you should embrace it. Say, stay at home, but, you know, to the year eight or the year six... students, here's the you know the I don't know, you know, the essay on Louis the 15th or whatever, if there was a Louis the 15th. I can't forget.
I
Louis
knew him well.
Yes,
but I mean, you just raised another point there. This school closures because of snow. I mean, why is it that every secondary school manages without fail, virtually in all areas? I'm talking Brentwood. I'm talking everywhere. Manages to stay open, but junior schools don't. Why is that? Is this the suing culture we're talking about here, because they're frightened that Johnny will throw a snowball and hit somebody else and somebody else is going to sue them, or what?
I don't know, and I think you could easily take each school on a different case throughout the county, throughout the country. But there's all, sometimes it's all about perception, and sometimes people may want to take this on board, that people will see. So, for example, people may see there's a certain school, a senior school that I know has been at top of the GCSE rankings for 4 years in a row, has the most improved since where it came from about 2006, has seen as the most improved school in that particular borough, and it never closes. It never closes, and it's almost part of its mission statement. When people connect that we never close culture with their success. Now, others may say, hold on a second, we're a school on top of a hill with a catchment area that goes throughout all sorts of areas, and we're a school which has five-year-olds.
Mm.
But I don't want the five-year-olds just to miss school for one day, et cetera, et cetera. You know, and that's understandable. But they've got to understand that it's perception of, you know, it's almost like if you think like a business, it's what do people say about your business, you know, and that's for them to maybe consider.
And the consequences, of course, when you close your school, then parents have to stop work. You know, mum might be working, dad might be working, so they can't work. If you've got young children particularly, then you just can't go because it's too late to get a, you know, childcare in those circumstances. Right, we'll talk about police in a little while. I'll just take a little...
This will be an interesting time now. Obviously, every county had a police commissioner elected in November, and the first challenge for police commissioners, really, once they've set up their teams and... is setting as part of the council tax, there's a bit you have to pay for policing, and the Essex Police Crime Commissioner Nick Alston has basically set it where it's almost a, well, we call it a copper a day, you know, keeps crime at bay. You know, I should do this for a living. I should do it well for a living, and that's basically what he's talking about. You know, it's only a penny a day extra, et cetera, for people, but. I guess one of the questions people may ask is, you know, when he's increasing the precepts, what are we getting for our money? What are people of Essex getting? And, you know, you will, and again, then you'll get into this debate about recorded crime, et cetera, and, you know, police will say recorded crime is down. And that's the minute you enter in the world of statistics, it's a to and fro, isn't it? He said, she said. And a question that we often ask is, and we have done every year, we put them, how many crimes have you detected or solved? And, you know, if you find out in an area, so for example, like Thurrock, that 90% of burglaries are unsolved, then you're entitled to say, you know that's an interesting stat. And you have to ask the police, what are you doing about it? Now, when I asked that this year, because we take seven categories and ask for what did you detect or solve? And this year we looked at the seven categories and went back to our 2006 figure, and we calculated that in between those 2 years, there's something like 2,835 less crimes reported in those seven categories. So I think our argument would be, can you understand that the public might expect, with 2,835 less jobs on your books, you might have solved maybe one or two more? Now, you might ask, who are we asking that question of? Well, we're certainly not asking the question of the Bobby on the beat, because he's not there. Yeah. It's saying to people, you know, the Bobby on the beat, you know, it's a bit like saying to a journalist who publishes 3,000 stories a year, but how many of those were investigations? And you might say, well, none really, because I was basically writing stories and reporting and churning. And they might say, you're a journalist, not a journalist. And you say, well, isn't that the same thing saying? So it's not the Bobby on the beat. They would love to, they join the job because they love to solve crimes. It's what they do. It's, you know, it's not them. It's saying, is there something way up? Not even the chief inspector. The chief inspector at Brentwood or Harlow or Braintree, etc., or Grays, will just simply have to say, you know, he's got a speech to make. And he can only, you know, he's in that middle ranking. He would say, well, we're determined to fight crime, etc. Those decisions, are they made, you know, way up in Chelmsford, ACCs, you know, assistant chief constables, and now, of course, the police crime commissioner? Are you all meeting every day when it comes to recorded crimes and saying, have you got too many recorded crimes? Why have you got 42 recorded crimes today? Can you make it 32? Are they doing it? Are you making it 32 tomorrow? Now, it's almost saying, so the crimes exist. Mm. It's saying, no. And what people realise, I think what the question is, not the assertion is, you know, the crimes are committing, but you're not recording them.
That whole thing about the police commission, that was just a disaster, really, wasn't it? The whole election process, nobody knew anything about it. Nobody turned up to vote. It was the lowest vote ever on anything, surely. And even the candidates were left not quite sure what was going on. It was a PR disaster, wasn't it, really?
Well, yes. Well, I mean, to be fair to all the candidates, they went from the whole... Every candidate went to every corner of the county to disseminate information. If people don't want to read the information, that is different. You know, and that's the public, you know, public can't go around, I didn't know anything about it. Well, you did, you just didn't read. So that's not the candidate's fault. The different factor is people, you know, it's like a by-election or, you know, local ward by-election somewhere. You know, you'll get a turnout usually around 20% or 19% or 22%. It's no different. And also, you know, the public really want people to expect the organisation, just get on with it. Just get on with it. You know, that's why we'll vote once every five. The majority of people say we vote once every 4 or 5 years, and then please get on with it. If I've got a real problem, I'll go to a surgery and see a councillor or an MP. If I've got a real problem, like in the policing, I'll go to the public counter, but the public counter may not be there. They'll go and ring 101 or indeed 999. You know, and that's the way it functions. You know, this whole business, you know, people weren't interested. That's why they didn't pay attention, and that's why they didn't vote.
Okay, right. You're going to be part of this program in the near future. There's interesting things going on in Brentwood Council at the moment. It seems to be following trends of the Thurrock Council went a couple of years ago. So that's going to be fun, isn't it?
Yes, I think when it happens. I think what is interesting, politicians of all from Westminster to Brentwood to Thurrock to Harlow to wherever you are, they always fall out. But some have their fallouts in public and some have their fallouts in private. And sometimes and that's what some have been very good at, of actually behind the scenes falling out. You may have two councillors or two MPs who haven't spoken to each other in 5, 10, 15 years. But others decide, and whether rightly or wrongly, I'm not the one, you know, to say. And these spats become public. But they might not say it's a spat. It's a political division. And what you're seeing, you know, if a couple of years ago in Thurrock, you had a schism of concerned conservatives, they were called. And you seem to have something again. And sorry if I sounded a bit remote from it, as I only hover over Brentwood. You seem to have the same thing, but I'm sure the four conservatives will say it's a matter of politics, pragmatism, and ideology. You know, they haven't just woken up one morning. I'm sure Russell Quirk hasn't woken up one morning and said, "Oh, I'm really going to." You know, he's a. You know, Russell will say, "I'm the Tory. I'm the Tory here. I'm the Conservative, etc. I espouse all these views and beliefs. And I believe there are people who aren't doing that." So, you know, that's the way he'll see it. And that's often the way that people see it. And it comes in local politics as well. You often get people saying, you know, some people are politicians and some people are simply fellow travellers. And sometimes people of convictions get upset with people who just think are fellow travellers, not actually with conviction politicians.
We look forward to all of that. Of course, one thing we can commend Bremer Council for is its openness, because it's one of these councils that is filmed and everything that goes on in chamber is recorded. You think that's a good thing?
Yes, as long as it doesn't cost much. You know, I hope that, you know, that's the key thing, isn't it? And it is very simple to do, tape recording or filming, etc. I don't know if people look in, but, you know, you'd be surprised. We know from politics stories, people do, but... You know, I think selfishly some journalists sometimes, over in Thurrock, they now tape it, you know, and audio tape it. And sometimes it helps us when you're not, your shorthand isn't what it should be, that you can sometimes check. And sometimes these things are extremely important because accuracy is everything.
Michael, thank you very much for today. And we look forward to seeing you from time to time on our Wednesday political show. Thank you very much for your company today. And I know you'd like gentlemen, so this is especially for you. All right. You're very excited when you heard that this was coming out, I know. Michael, thank you very much indeed. Bye-bye now.